Hey, it's Ben Greenfield. At the time you are listening to this, I am off the coast of Florida somewhere taking a free diving course. So I'm likely 100 feet down in the Pacific Ocean underneath a boat getting eaten by a shark. But I still wanted to bring you an episode. So do I have a doozy for you? It's Jim Quick. You'll learn more about him in a minute. But first, I want to tell you about a few sponsors. Don't fast forward. You want to know about these sponsors because they're all things that I use. Number one, Thrive. I don't know if you know much about Thrive Market or if you've ordered anything from them, but if you haven't, then you need to get your head out from under the wellness rock and hook up with these folks. So here's what Thrive Market is. It's kind of like Costco for eating healthy. It's this online shopping club that lets you get healthy brands. We're talking about things like coconut flakes, coconut milk, kombucha, sardines, you name it, all those things that we like as far as health food goes. But you get 50% off retail prices shipped anywhere in the USA for absolutely free. We're talking paleo, gluten-free, vegan, raw, non-GMO, organic, fair trade. They've got really cool search and filter options where you can find exactly what you're looking for your specific body and your specific diet. Good food can be extremely expensive, but it's not at Thrive Market, which is great. And for every paid membership, they give a free membership to a low-income family, teacher, or military family, which I think is one more reason to shop there. So here's how you do it. You go to thrivemarket.com. If you don't know how to spell Thrive, then you need to get on Google. thrivemarket.com/Ben Greenfield, and you get a free 2-month trial and 15% off your first order. So really, really cool website. Check it out. thrivemarket.com/Ben Greenfield. I cannot guarantee that you will not salivate. This podcast is also brought to you by Harry's. Now, I want to tell you a quick story. A friend of mine asked me the other day if I was going to do Movember this year. If you don't know what it is, Movember is the month where dudes grow mustaches to raise awareness and money for men's health issues. Now, here's the deal. I believe it would take me probably a good 3, possibly 4, maybe even a decade of years to actually grow a mustache. I can't do it. I look like I've got nasty little outgrowths on my face when I try to grow copious amounts of hair, even if it is a mustache. So I'm kind of still on the fence about whether I'm going to do Movember. But still, whether or not you do Movember, you should check out Harry's because they're the official razor partner of Movember. Even if you don't want a creepy Movember mustache, you can still get an awesome shaving kit from Harry's. Here's how you do it. You go to harrys.com. And at harrys.com, you can use discount code BEN to get pretty much anything you want there. Their blades are incredibly sharp, designed in a German blade factory, but they cut straight to you instead of going through the drugstores. So you get that highly ergonomic handle attached to a wonderful close-cutting blade for a fraction of the price of the big drugstore brands. Now, that's not all. They've also got foaming facial gels that smell fantastic. They've got aftershaves that are rich and smell amazing and hydrate your skin. So really, really high quality stuff. And you can get it all at harrys.com. You want to use discount code BEN. That's harrys.com. Use discount code BEN. And remember, if you are participating in Movember, do not use any of your Harry's products anywhere near the upper lip until the month of Movember is over. This podcast is also brought to you by Texas Superfoods. Texas Superfood? Texas Superfood, not Superfoods. I don't know what you'll get if you go to Texas Superfoods, but you can go to TexasSuperfood.com, TexasSuperfood.com. And when you use promo code BEN at TexasSuperfood.com, what will you get? Let me tell you, vine-ripened, raw fruits and vegetables, beneficial probiotics, digestive enzymes, but you don't get all of this in a giant, huge box that shows up at your front doorstep. Instead, all of it is packed into a teeny tiny capsule or powder or stick pack, depending on which you prefer. You've got all those options, but this is basically everything you need in a pill, So you don't have to eat pounds and pounds of kale and granny green apples and beets to get all the nutrients from all those foods. Instead, you just pop some Texas Superfood. Check them out. TexasSuperfood.com. TexasSuperfood.com and code BEN at checkout gets you 10% discount. That's on your first order. So if you're already using it, you have to pay full price. But if you're already using it, you will, if you know what I mean. And finally, this podcast is brought to you by Casper mattresses. So Casper mattresses are pretty cool because normally when you go to the store to buy a mattress, you have to carry a giant mattress in a pickup truck or somebody else's car that you borrow. You got to pack it into your house. You got to unfold it. Maybe you don't like it. Maybe you do. Casper is super convenient. They just ship a mattress right to your house. It comes in this sexy little box that you can unpack literally in like 2 seconds flat, but it's not just a cheapo mattress. It's actually a really comfortable mattress. I have one. I have a king size. It has premium latex foam combined with memory foam, and it's all organic style ingredients. You don't have to sleep on it and feel guilt-free. You don't have to worry that your mattress is slowly killing you. You just get better nights, and as a consequence of that, better days. So they're super resilient. They've got very, very supportive comfort, and you get them at a fraction of the price because they're kind of like bypassing dealing with resellers and showrooms and just passing the savings on right to you. Isn't that nice of them? So casper.com/ben, casper.com/ben, what do you get? You get $50 off an already super affordable mattress. So that's casper.com/ben. Check it out. Well worth it for a good night's sleep. So I hope you enjoy all those sponsors. I don't endorse stuff unless I actually really do like it. So that being said, let's get into this episode with Jim Quick. In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show,
a light switch just went on, and like this aha, and I started to understand things for the first time. I started to focus. I started to read 2, 3, 4, 5 times faster, and all of a sudden my grades started to explode, but then so did my life.
And so what I do is I'm like a personal trainer for your brain to make your brain more fit, more agile and stronger, you know, more explosive. And it can be done, right? Because your brain is like a muscle.
This mindlessness that we're in, you know, we're multitasking everywhere. And we know that multitasking is not real. It's an illusion that we're actually just switching from one thing to another, and there's switching costs to be able to regain our focus.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield here, and my guest in today's podcast is Jim Quick. And yes, that's his real name, K-W-I-K, Jim Quick. And Jim is very, very quick. He can actually learn things much faster than mere mortals like you and I. Take reading, for example. Most folks read at about 200 to 250 words per minute, which is also called WPM. But Jim can read heavy science material at 500 WPM and light fiction at upwards of 1300 WPM. And he remembers the stuff he reads. I've seen Jim on stage memorizing the names of every face in the crowd and big strings of random numbers. A lot of us struggle to remember like the 7 digits of a phone number, but Jim can remember phone numbers all day long, hundreds of them. The fact is, though, that Jim isn't necessarily special, as you're going to learn in today's podcast episode. He doesn't have some kind of natural superpowers. He's had to learn all this stuff. And in today's episode, you're going to learn how you, too, can pick up a lot of these things that Jim does, regardless of your age or your background or your education, and you can get your brain to work better. Jim helps a lot of people. He worked with the cast of the X-Men. He advises, you know, celebrities and high performers like Will Smith and Elon Musk. And today you're going to learn his amazing story, how he kind of became one of the smartest guys with one of the fastest brains on the face of the planet, and how you can use a lot of his techniques to achieve what you want to get a better brain for yourself. So this is going to be a really cool episode. Jim's a great guy. He's a wealth of knowledge. So sit back and get ready to soak this stuff up. Jim, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Ben, thank you so much for having me. And hello to everyone who's listening. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And like I just mentioned, you didn't start off. You weren't born, you know, holding a science novel and reading at 1500 WPM. So how'd this all happen? How'd you become a memory and a learning expert?
Okay, well, you could say that my, you know, it's a cliche phrase, but my inspiration really was my desperation. When people see me do the things that you see me do on stage, memorize a room full of people's names or 100 random words in and out of order or numbers, you know, 100 numbers forwards and backwards, I always tell people afterwards, I don't do this to impress you. I really do this to express to you what's really possible. Because as you said, everyone could do this. And no matter their age or their background, their career, their diet, their level of education, you know, you name it, their gender. It's just we weren't taught that. If anything, we were taught this lie that we're not smart enough or that our intelligence, our learning, our potential, our memory is somehow fixed like our shoe size. Mm-hmm. And we know from all the research, you know, we've learned more about the human brain in the past 20 years than the previous 2,000 years. And what we've learned is that it has an incredible capacity to focus, to think, to absorb information, to retain information way beyond what people once thought. And so it's not fixed. And if anything, you know, we were taught that lie. And I know this from personal experience. You know, when I wasn't always able to do these things. In fact, when I grew up with severe learning challenges. And a lot of people don't know that about me. When I was, the impetus of it was when I was 5 years old, I had a really bad accident in kindergarten and I had a head injury and some brain challenges, and it led to this string, literally like a decade and a half of learning disabilities. And,
what happened?
I took a really bad fall head first into an iron grade radiator, and I got knocked out. And as a 5-year old kid, you know,
like one of those super duper like hard radiators that you see against the wall.
Yes. Oh. And it was a little bit crazy. So it was, and I remember just waking up in the hospital, and it's scary, you know, at the age of 5, right? When you don't, you know, have a sense, real sense of identity. And, you know, and I was out of school for a while. And, but when I came back, I just didn't understand things. I didn't, you know, growing up in elementary school, junior high, even in high school, I wouldn't understand what teachers would talk about. I had really a lot of problems focusing. I didn't have a memory to speak of. It even took me an extra couple of years, longer than all my friends, to learn how to read. And so it was a real challenge. And when I got to college, I was really excited because I was like, okay, no one knows me here. I could start fresh, show the world, show my family, show myself that I could really succeed and not have to struggle and suffer. When I did, I actually, it got worse. And at that time, I was ready to quit school freshman year. And a friend of mine was like, why don't you come visit? I'm going to go home for the weekend to California to see my folks. And why don't you go and come with me and get some perspective? And I decided to do it. I've never been to California before. And when I get to the family's home, the family is extremely successful. I mean, beautiful home on the water and stuff. But they were just, besides the wealth, they were happy, right? And they just, and the father walks me around his property right before dinner and asked me a very innocent question, asked me how's school? You know, something you would ask an 18-year-old, right? And I honestly break down. I start crying, and to this complete stranger, because I have so much pressure. And I tell him that I have to tell my parents that I'm going to have to quit and I'm just not good enough for this. It's not meant to be. And he asked me a very innocent question again. So it's like, why are you in school? You know, what do you want to be? What do you want to do? What do you want to have? What do you want to share? And it took me by surprise, because that's not a question I've ever asked before. But you ask a new question, you get new answers. And when I go to respond, he says, stop. And he takes out of his back pocket a journal. And I always thought like 12-year-old girls carried diaries and wrote in diaries. But he takes a couple sheets out of the journal and he makes me write down my goals. And, you know, after a while, I don't know how much time went by, but I had like 50 things on there, you know, like a bucket list before I knew what a bucket list was. And when I was done with the exercise, I just start folding the sheets to put in my pocket. And he reaches out and grabs it. And he's just like, he starts reading it. And I start freaking out because I don't expect like somebody to look at my intimate dreams and my goals, my desires, my fantasies. And I don't even know what he's thinking. And the guy's obviously very successful. And he looks at me and he looks me right in the eyes. He says, "Jim, you are this close to everything on this list." And he's holding his two index fingers spread apart about 10 inches. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me, right? You give me 10 lifetimes, I can't crack that list. And he takes his index fingers and he puts them on the side of my temples, the side of my head, and, you know, implying that it was my brain, you know, between, you know, this close, the length of my head here.
Right.
And he takes me into his home, into a room I've never seen before. It's wall-to-wall, ceiling-to-floor, covered in books. And now I'd be really excited about seeing that room, but not at that time. He just starts grabbing books and starts handing them to me. And I start looking at the titles and their biographies of men and women in history and some very early personal growth books. I mean, then the old school stuff, like the Norman Vincent Peale, Power of Positive Thinking, Psycho-Cybernetics, you know, all combined. And he says, Jim, you have to read one of these books a week if you want the things on that list. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Like, I'm a horrible reader. Have you not been listening? I can't even keep up with school. I'm ready to quit. And he's like, he looks me right in the eyes and he says, "Jim," he said, "don't let school get in the way of your education." And I was like, wow, you know, and I didn't even know back then it was a Mark Twain quote, but I was like, you know, that's fair. And yet that's a nice quote, but I still can't read all this. And then he has the audacity. He reaches into his back pocket and takes out my bucket list, which he still has. And he starts reading every single thing line by line. And honestly, Ben, a lot of the things on that list were things I wanted to do for my family, you know, things that they could never afford, they would never do for themselves. And with that extra leverage, I agree to read one book a week. So now I'm back at school and I'm at my desk and I have a pile of books that I need to read for school and a pile of books that I want to read, you know, for my life. And in order to do that, I don't do the things that you teach, you know, to your listeners, to your audience. I don't take care of myself. I don't make self-care a priority. You know, I don't eat. I don't sleep. I'm just living in the library. I have no social time, not working out. I'm not doing all the things that are good for my wellness and peak performance. I just live in the library. And one day, as you can imagine.
You mean that was then?
That was back then.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, because I was trying to keep up with all the schoolwork and then all these books I told my mentor I would read. And so I'm living in the library and I hit a wall. And the wall came in the form of me just passing out from sheer exhaustion. I fall down the flight of stairs at the library. I hit my head again and I wake up in the hospital. And now at this point, I wake up and I'm hooked up to all these IVs because I'm very malnourished. I'm very underweight. I weigh 117 pounds. So it's a scary place. I thought I died, and maybe part of me kind of wished I did. And I think there just has to be a better way. And when I had that thought, the nurse came in with a mug of green tea, and it had a picture, a drawing of a pretty famous, iconic genius, and it was Albert Einstein. And it had a quote on it, one of those quote mugs, and it said what everyone has heard a million times in different iteration, something to the effect of, "The same level of thinking that's created your problem won't solve your problem." You know, that whole idea of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And that's what I was like, what's my problem? I was thinking, well, my problem is I'm a really slow learner. I was like, well, how do I think differently about this problem? I was like, well, maybe I could learn how to learn faster. And I thought, well, how do I do that? I thought school. And I picked up a course bulletin with all the courses to choose for next semester. And I saw hundreds of classes. And all the classes were classes on what to learn. Math, history, science, Spanish, but there were zero classes on how to learn, right? How to think, how to be creative, how to solve problems, how to focus and concentrate, how to read faster, how to remember things. I always thought, you know, it should have been the fourth R, and, you know, teach you 3 R's in school, reading, writing, arithmetic. But what about the fourth R, retention? You know, what about recall? What about remembering? You know, Socrates says there is no learning without remembering. And so anyway, I started studying that. My whole mind is set around this riddle of how do I work my brain? How does my brain work so I can work my brain better? How does memory work so I can work my memory? I started studying everything on brain science, on adult learning theory, on multiple intelligence, anything I get my hands on to help me basically hack my own mind and fix my forgetfulness and all the issues that I had. And in a short period of time, about 60 days into it, a light switch just went on, like this aha, and I started to understand things for the first time. I started to focus. I started to read 2, 3, 4, 5 times faster. And all of a sudden my grades started to explode, but then so did my life. And after, and how I ended up teaching it and us having this conversation now is, you know, once you get that kind of result in your life, you can't help but share it with other people, right? And because I was like, I didn't understand why we weren't taught this back in school, because we were very ill-prepared. And I started tutoring, and one of my first students, she was a freshman and in college, and she read, she struggled with the speed reading for about a week, but then that light switch went on, and she ended up reading 30 books in 30 days. Isn't that amazing, Ben? Like, wow. If anyone could read, listening to this, could read 30 books and go to Amazon, pick out 30 books, have them shipped to you, and just read it in a month, like, how amazing would your life be? And I wanted to find out not how she did it, I want to know why. And I found out that her mother was diagnosed with terminal cancer and was given 60 days to live. And the books she was reading were books to save her mom's life. And I can't even hardly talk about it now, but I get a call from her 6 months later, and she's crying and crying and crying. And I find out their mother has not only survived, but is really starting to get better. Doctors don't know how or why. They call it a miracle. But her mother attributes it 100% to the great advice she got from her daughter, who learned it from all these books.
Wow.
And that's where I realized that, you know, ideas, that learning, that if knowledge is power, you know, then learning is a superpower. It's your superpower. And it's the biggest fulcrum to be able to move things in your life, to be able to multiply and magnify your life, is your ability to learn. And that's why I dedicated my life to showing people how to get more out of their minds and get ahead.
I want to ask you about a few of your techniques here when it comes to things like speed reading and memorization. But before I do, I hear this thrown around all the time, and I want to get your take on it. The fact that, or the idea that we only use a certain percentage of our brains, like, I've heard like 10%, 1%, 5%. Yeah. What's your take on that? Do we only use part of our brains?
Yeah, and all everything I talk about is very functional, and so I like to take the theory and turn them into techniques that are really practical. And so I've heard all the same things that you have also. You know, Einstein originally said we use like 10% of our brain. I read that, I know Stanford University later on came out with 2%. You know, I read something recently, 1/10,000th of 1%. Like, we have enough brain power to last us a million lifetimes. It keeps on going down. You know, I don't know if the 70s had something to do with it or what. But you know, but the latest research actually saying that we actually use all our brain. You know, it's just how we're using it is very inefficiently. It's equivalent of maybe if like, I was a really good typer back in school, because I wasn't good at anything in school. But when I used to visit my grandmother, she would have this rusty dusty typewriter. And when I took typing back in middle school, you know, I picked it up and I had this two-finger technique, and I did really well with it. But when the teacher asked me to use all my fingers, it felt a little bit differently and such. But I just think we learned in a different, they say that we use all our brain, but it's how we're using it is not as productive or as high performance as it needs to be. And so I like to be able to optimize that for individuals and show them how to absorb information, how to concentrate, how to be able to solve their problems, and how to remember more, you know, in less time.
Okay, got it. So it's not really clear biologically, like, how much of our brains that we actually use, but your goal is to just teach people how to use as much of it as they actually can.
And it comes in, because I think, like, people could use all their brain, but their potential is nowhere near their potential, right? And so people could, for example, move around and use their body, but they're not expressing it, you know, as someone like you and a lot of your audience. Because I know what I love about talking to yourself and a lot of your listeners is you're high performers, right? You know, you're going out there and you're ready. Some people are already top of their class and they just want to up level to the next level. And so what I do is I'm like a personal trainer for your brain, to make your brain more fit, more agile and stronger, you know, more explosive. And it can be done, right? Because your brain is like a muscle, but it's use it or lose it. And the two dips people usually have with their cognitive abilities, usually when they're out of school, because sometimes when they graduate school, they feel like their learning is done. And when they retire, sometimes they retire their brain, and their body is not far from that. In fact, there's a lot of correlation when we talk about health and high performance, that that keeping your brain active actually helps you live longer. On the cover of Time magazine, they had the super nuns, the done with these nuns living well into their 80s, 90, 100, above. They wanted to find out what's the secret to their longevity. Part of it had to do with their faith and their gratitude, but the other half had to do is they were dedicated lifelong learners. I mean, they were having deep conversations. They were reading a lot. They were doing the puzzles. They were doing all these things, keeping their brain alive. And it actually helped keep them alive longer and also added more, not only years to their life, but life to their years also as well. But one of the biggest challenges when I say your brain is like a muscle is we live in this age of they call it now digital dementia, people suffering. Mm. And I don't know if people can relate to this right now. It's a new kind of buzzword in health is that, you know, even if you're in your 20s listening to this, if you feel like you're more absent-minded, like you're taking a shower, you can't remember if you shampooed your hair, you walk into a room or open up the refrigerator and just forget what you're looking for, or go to the store to buy that one thing at Whole Foods and you come back with a whole grocery bag except for that one thing, or you forget a name, or you forget where you put your keys or where you parked your car. All those things, you know, part of it is this mindlessness that we're in. You know, we're multitasking everywhere, and we know that multitasking is not real. You know, where we're faking, we're actually, it's an illusion that we're actually just switching from one thing to another, and there's switching costs to be able to get, regain our focus. So people who are more productive are people who have more focus. But not only that, we're outsourcing our brains to technology. Like, think about years ago, how many phone numbers, you know, like we used to know back then. But now we outsource our memories to our phones. It keeps all our phone numbers, our emails, our calendars, our to-dos. It does simple, you know, math for us. It helps us get from here to there. But because our brains aren't getting the exercise it would normally get, you know, we're having these memory lapses. And they even, I was talking to in front of thousands of doctors, and somebody gave me this term. They said actually this situation where because of technology like GPS, when we're outsourcing our brains, looking for a third-party device to tell us when and where to turn, it's actually, they're not getting early detection of things like dementia or Alzheimer's because they're not realizing when they would normally have memory loss, so they're not going to the doctor to get it checked out. So this is a real situation. I believe technology is great. It makes your life much more convenient. But in other ways, it's crippling. It'd be the equivalent of, Ben, you know, somebody getting in the car to run, you know, an errand that's two blocks away. They're using technology and it might be convenient, but their body is not getting the exercise, right? Escalator, elevator, they're not taking the stairs. They're not building the muscles. And we know with your brain, you know, with things like neurogenesis, neuroplasticity, neurogenesis, genesis meaning birth, you could create new brain cells until the day you die. Neuroplasticity is saying your brain is like plastic and you can create new connections by having new thoughts and novelty. And that's what Einstein, you know, Einstein's brain wasn't bigger than anyone else's. It was, if anything, was a little below average, but he had more density in different parts of his brain because he would run these thought experiments and it would create this neuroplasticity, all these connections between brain cells that would just imagine it being a communication like device where these wires are just so interconnected and he's just have, you know, amazing ideas and thoughts and intelligence.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know about the technology thing because for me, it helps me to keep a clear head, right? Mm-hmm. Like when I can Google something quickly and get it off my plate, or when I can use something like Evernote to mm-hmm. get rid of 10 things that are jumbled around in my brain. For me, the way that I work is I can then write a creative chapter in a work of fiction much better because I feel like I have a clear head, or I can sit down and learn the finger styling on a specific guitar piece mm-hmm. because I don't have all those distractions. So for me, I think it depends on how you use technology.
Completely, and also use our brain. You know, some people, they outsource their brain and they don't use their brain for higher levels of thinking and creativity. Right. And I love technology and I use all the different apps and my phone, you know, laptops is my best friend. The challenge is, so I believe in getting information out of your mind and organizing it and having clear thoughts, you know, like your brain, like on your mind on water. For me, what I like to apply these things for is similar to like when we talked about reading, for example, and you have books on your shelf. And yes, we could always reference this information, and yet it's one thing to have something on the tip of your tongue. It's another to have it like at our mental fingertips where it's a part of us. Read a book and you absorb the book and organize it in a way that you could actually teach a class on the one thing or on essentialism or on whatever, you know, good to great or whatever reading. So like just to have it as part of your organized knowledge base, that's what I want to get people to. And I'm all for creativity and decision. We have whole programs. You know, our programs online are speed reading memory programs. We're in 150 countries, but a lot of it is based on expressing that information. Once you learn it, how do you express it and teach it to others and write about it and publish it and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of, this is one of my favorite books growing up, Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes, the section where he meets Watson, and he says, I believe after learning his name, I don't remember if this is the context for sure, but it was something that Sherlock Holmes got introduced to, and he said, now I'll do my best to forget it. And his reasoning there is that every time you have to add knowledge into your brain, you might forget something that you knew before. And his powers of deduction come from keeping a clear head that isn't jumbled about with a bunch of facts. So, yeah, I think we walk a fine line between, like, you know, using technology and outsourcing facts versus you know, keeping
it. And I love, just on this topic of the idea of mindfulness. You know, I have a very, my mind is not always, is not racing other than when I want it to be a race. I mean, I have my mindful practices every single day, multiple times a day. And the thing is here's the opposite. Like, everyone knows, like, if you could go out there and double your knowledge base and you can know twice as much as your field, that you'd be more valuable, you know, to others and certainly in the workplace. And the opposite is also true. If we lost half our memories, you know, we would lose a lot. And so all I'm saying is not just memorizing facts, but having it in a way that you could apply it and comprehend it and understand it also, because there's a difference between being able to just rote memorize, you know, when, you know, a certain formula or a certain history, date in history, and actually apply that information to higher levels of thinking and comprehension. And so that's where I like to spend the time. And I like to show people how to remember the things that they want to remember and remember long term. I mean, people could read a book and then, or go to an incredible event, and then 2 days later, they don't realize there's a learning curve, but there's also a forgetting curve. Like, why go to a business conference or go to a, you know, high performance health event, and then 2 days later, they say you could lose up to 80% of what you learned. Yeah. And that's a travesty, because that's, you're always trying to gain, you know, and can be able to catch up.
Yeah. Yeah. Returning to that concept of kind of like retiring or dying, or using the brain like a muscle so that you don't lose it. Do you personally go out of your way to pick up new skills or new tasks or learn new things on a daily or on a weekly or on a monthly basis? Do you have any kind of system or rule that you follow to just like pick up new things?
I do. And one of the things that I just think it's very important for everybody is, this is a lifestyle for me, right? Just much like what you teach, is you live it. You know, I had to spend some time with, as you mentioned, Will Smith on the set of a new superhero film that's coming out, and I can't wait. I'm a superhero geek, and this is my life, because I had trouble reading in school, and I taught myself how to read by reading comic books late at night when everyone thought I was sleeping, and something about the stories and the illustration just brought it to life. But, you know, he has this phrase where he says that he doesn't have to get prepared, because he stays prepared. Do you know what I mean? And that part of it is our lifestyle, right? Like, I'm sure you could roll out a bed 4 o'clock in the morning and people could ask you about things, and you could do it because you live it, right? And so part of what we're talking about and keeping things up to date with our brain, something I live all the time, is your brain thrives. Like, neurogenesis and plasticity, it thrives on having the proper nutrients, the proper amounts of oxygen, and novelty, right? Just like our bodies do. And so I think it's important always to keep on learning, and that, you know, we all, learning only stops when we die, because when we're green, we grow, and we're brown, we rot. That being said, yes, I do. I for 4 years, I read a book a day. I don't quite do that right now, but I like to get people reading, at least our students online, reading one book a week, which is very, very doable, because the average person reads about a book and a half a year, you know, and our students read upwards of 52 books a year. And so I think reading is really important, because the half-life of information now, it's tough, where with Moore's Law and the amount of information doubling at dizzying speed, you know, what we know now is often outdated. So I would say that reading and spending 30 minutes a day reading is just not only good to be current on what's going on in your field of expertise, but also it's great exercise. I mean, there's nothing better than reading, especially even speed reading. The difference between walking and jogging or sprinting is like the difference between, you know, people's reading and speed reading. So I think reading is very, Very important to stay up to date.
There seems to be something different neurally that's going on when you read, though. Like reading for me, I think perhaps in that way I may be a little bit like you seem to be with reading, to where it almost is something that you digest with great veracity, and it comes very easily. And I'm kind of the same way with reading. I love to read, and I'll pick up books and digest them extremely quickly, but it's at the point where it's not that challenging to read. And the way that I understand it is that the more that you do something, the deeper that you carve those pathways in your brain that become comfortable with those specific activities. So for example, I also write a lot. I have since I was about 7 years old, and writing comes very, very easily to me. But then, you know, for example, I'm learning to box right now, and my head is just spinning the whole time with just six different punches for boxing. Mm-hmm. You know, my coach will tell me throw a one, a four, and a six. And, you know, if you were to tell me to read for 20 minutes, I'd just breeze through it. But, you know, just doing something as simple as throwing a one and a four and a six for 5 minutes in a row makes my head spin. So how, like, can you get to a mm-hmm. point where you get so comfortable with something that you're doing a lot to make you more intelligent or to keep your brain turned on that you need to figure out a way to make it more difficult, or you need to introduce something new?
100%. And so I'm all about the challenge, because I think, you know, as they say, with challenge comes the change. And so with reading and deepening the grooves, to talk about that and talk about habit building and stuff like in that field, I would say that, again, the difference between reading at 200 words a minute, which the average person does, and reading at 400 or 500, essentially reading something in 15 minutes that normally takes an hour and still getting the same value and comprehension and understanding and recall of it, is a totally different exercise. And so part of, just like with working out, it's a lot of it is you stretch, and then you stabilize, and then you rest, and then you stretch again. And so that's a lot with the learning, even up-leveling people in their reading abilities. You know, people think that they should be such a great reader because they've been doing it for 2, 3, 4, 5 decades. But that's not true. It's the equivalent of that saying, people say they have 20 years of experience in business or whatever, but some of them have only had 1 year of experience 20 times. Right? Because if you just repeat the same thing, you're not getting any better, because it's not just the practice of doing it, it's the training and the stretching that does it, right? Just like when you're working out with your body. And so taking it to new levels, I would say that the levels of learning that we know in adult learning theory, we know the first level of learning anything is this level of unconscious incompetence. What's unconscious? We're not aware of something. Incompetent meaning we can't do it. We don't know we don't know. So for instance, speed reading, most people don't realize every single person listening to this call could double or triple their reading speed with no sacrifice to their comprehension. So they're unconsciously incompetent. They don't know they don't know. The second level stage to get to, this goes back to the habits and learning, you know, six different punches, for example. The second level of learning is conscious incompetence. That means you're consciously aware that you're incompetent. You don't know how to do it. The third stage of learning is the stage of conscious competence. Conscious competence is a stage where you are competent, you can do the skill, but it takes your conscious, because it's conscious competence, attention and awareness, right? And so that's, you know, so some people, for example, they could type or they could drive a car, but they have to consciously pay attention to that act. But the fourth level of learning is really the stage we want to get people to. That's the stage of unconscious competence. Unconscious means you're not aware of it and you're competent. That's the level of second nature. And that the only way to get from stage three to stage four, where you're consciously competent to unconsciously competent second nature, is through that practice and the rehearsal. Because every single time you do it, you know, you're creating these pathways in your nervous system that allows you to do it easier the second time. And, you know, in this interval training and this spaced out repetition helps you to do that. Now, the fifth level, I would say I would add another level on to that, is the level of mastery, right? Which you're well aware of because you're a student of that. And so, you know, and some people say it takes 10,000 hours. I think it'd be done a lot less than that, obviously, because I teach accelerated learning. But that's the stage where you're an expert, you know, on your one of the notables in your space for it. And so anyway, going back to this, I would say that anything that doesn't challenge you is not really changing us. That if you're not stretching, if you're not feeling a little uncomfortable, then you're not about to have that breakthrough. And they say to have a breakdown, to have a breakthrough. I often feel like people's success is directly correlated to their ability to withstand like that chaos or that uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's some biohackers who would disagree with you and say that you could, you know, hook yourself up to electrodes and learn to meditate, you know, very easily. Or
I'm friends with a lot of these people, and they've come over to the home and stuff like that. And I do that. And I also do my, and I'm an advisor on a couple of brain tech companies, and I'm all for slowing down and making it easy. It's just for me to be able to build a muscle, it still requires some kind of stretch or some kind of effort. Mm-hmm. And the metaphor, I'm not saying wholeheartedly across the board, but like, for example, I got to watch the Manny, the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. Yeah. I got invited over there with Sylvester Stallone, and that was just like, I won't go to the circumstance that allowed that to happen, but I'm over at his house, and it's him, myself, and Arnold, the Terminator. And after we're watching it, and the fight itself was really disappointing, but we allowed for a lot of conversation, and the three of us, just literally the three of us on the couch watching this, and it's just a weird sight where it's just like, who photoshopped me in that image? But I asked them, like, what's the difference between that and a champion? And Arnold comes out and says, like, the champion, as you've heard before, in terms of bodybuilding, is people who could get through that pain period, right? And they're both very. And I remember asking Stallone about something I didn't really want to do and stuff. And he asked, you know, is the pleasure worth the pain? And they're very highly sensitized, these two gentlemen who, you know, have accomplished a lot in with their bodies and also maybe in their careers. But going through that uncomfortable spot, I think, you know, like even with speed reading, like I teach people in the beginning, it's a little bit uncomfortable, just like lifting weights or doing, you know, different exercises and stuff like that. But it allows me to get the growth, and that's more of my attitude.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like a couple of good guys to watch a fight with, by the way, man.
But I mean, going through those uncomfortable things, like I just got out of cryotherapy this morning, and I just like, and I don't know how you feel, I'd love to get your opinion offline about it, but it's just like sitting in that chamber, and it's full body, I'm just sitting there, just I want to leave, but getting myself to push through sometimes, and I'm not saying where it's dangerous or anything like that, but just to experiment myself, because that's when you want to be able to show up in life, like when you're out there and be able to push through what's uncomfortable, to get on stage or to meet that person or to show up, because I think how we do anything is how we do everything.
Yeah, yeah. I throw my kids in one of those every morning, cold bath, just to toughen them up a little bit before school. And I do that too. You know, I'm in there every morning for about 10 minutes in a cold bath we have outside. So it's good stuff. I do like it. So I want to delve into a few of your techniques. So here's a biggie. It's simple, simple, I think, but a biggie. Names. So you meet somebody, you freaking forget their name like 5 minutes later. Maybe it's a girl that you think is cute and you're embarrassed because you can't remember her name, or, you know, a business colleague who you know you need to impress and now you're again embarrassed because you can't remember their name. How can you remember names better?
Okay. So I'll give you a number of distinctions, and that's really what I think a coach does, is, you know, they know stuff because they made their study, and in just stream of consciousness, I'm going to give you some real usable things, everyone. Because I think, first of all, we know why it's important, right? Because I think it, out there, it's like not only what you know, which is accelerated learning part, it's also who you know and who knows you. And so part of that is remembering them and things about them. And then also people also, it's so rare you remember someone's name. So when you actually remember someone's name, you really stand out. When you could walk into a room, meet 20 strangers and leave saying goodbye to all of them by name, they all remember you. So it's something that's so important. And so I would say, remember, here are five things that are important. I would say Dr. Mom, D-R-M-O-M. And I'm just using an acronym here so people, in case they can't write it down because they're working out or they're driving, they'll still remember it. The D stands for decide. And I would say this, like, I'm not even going to go into the visualization of how to remember names and everything. I'm just getting to the psychology, because I really do believe 80% of success is still going to come to the mental part of it. And so having the attitude that you decide to do something or you decide to remember it is going to greatly increase your chance of being able to remember it. All right. So it sounds kind of funny, but most people aren't used to making real decisions. You know, what a lot of people do is they'll talk about things that they prefer, things they might be interested in, but they don't really decide. Like if you walked into a room and decided you're going to remember three people's names, you're going to do it, right? And so the R in Dr. Mom stands for relax. And again, this is so common sense, but it's not common practice. You know, one of the biggest obstacles to your effective reading, to your effective memory, to being to study in the next level, you know, is getting rid of stress. Because when you're stressed, you create cortisol and adrenaline, and just it's really great for fight or flight. It's not good if you need to take a test. It's not good if you need to give a talk publicly. It's not good if you need to be able to remember someone's name. So just you need to be able to relax. I would say the MOM is really important. The M stands for, well, let me say this. Let's say if you're listening to this right now and you're horrible with names and you just can't remember anyone's name. But we had a suitcase here of $100,000 cash. If you just remember the name of the next person you meet, you would get that cash or for your nonprofit or whatever. And of course, everyone's going to remember that person's name, right? So the M stands for motivation. So I just want to point out that everyone would remember that person's name when they're incentivized to do so. So it had nothing to do with their potential, had nothing to do with their capability. It had everything to do with whether or not they were motivated. So the M stands for motivation. And so what I would say is you want to remember someone's name. And this is the thing. We remember the name of the people that were motivated also. Like you think about someone someone you're attracted to or someone you want to do business with, you know, someone you're motivated, you're much more likely to remember the person's name. So a simple tactic to be able to remember names is ask yourself, why do I want to remember this person's name? Because if you can't come up with a reason, you're not going to remember the person's name. But mm-hmm. even trying to come up with a reason, like I want to show this person respect, I want to practice these tips I learned from Jim Quick, you know, I want to show him, do a business deal, whatever. Just coming up with the reason will help you remember the name, because here's the tweetable. Reasons reap results, right? Mm-hmm. We've all read the book Start With Why by Simon Sinek. You know, always start with why. I believe there's a success formula. I call it H cubed, that, you know, you could affirm things in your head all day. You could visualize things. You could think things, positive thoughts about what you want and the goals that you want. But if you're not using your hands, head, hands, two of the H's, then usually what, like taking action on what you're thinking about, usually what's missing is that second H, which is your heart, which symbolizes emotion, the energy of motion, right? Because you can't steer a parked car, you need fuel. And so what's your why? So ask yourself, why do you want to remember this? Why do you want to learn this language? Why do you want to remember this fact? Why do you want to remember this person's name? And the O in MOM stands for observation. Observation. And this is the thing. A lot of people, they blame their memory is poor. They blame their retention. It has nothing to do with their retention. It has everything to do with their attention. And the example I use for this is the first time I got to meet President Clinton. And a lot of people know he's an incredible communicator and connector. He's got this charisma. A lot of people don't know he's got an incredible memory for people. And, you know, the first time I met him, I was like, how do you do it? What memory, you know, tricks are you using or techniques you're using? And he looks at me and says, Jim, I don't use any of these techniques, even though I know that it works. It's like, you know, I find out that his grandfather would take the grandchildren in Arkansas and tell them stories. But afterwards, he would quiz them to really see if they were listening and paying attention. And, you know, last time I was with him, I was at a charity event. I had to sit next to him at a charity event, 2,000 people. And there were some really amazing people at that table. Like, it just worked out that way. Branson was on there, Forrest Whitaker, Ashton Kutcher, his twin brother. I put the picture on Instagram. It looks kind of interesting with me sitting there. But it's like, I'm talking to Bill. And I also noticed that he has an incredible memory, but an incredible, powerful presence about him, a very powerful presence. But I think his powerful presence comes from being powerfully present. And the reason I'm saying that is when I'm at that table, there's seven other people much more important and notable than I am, and certainly even in that room and that table. But when he's talking to you, it's like nobody else in that ballroom, the 2,000 people, don't exist, because he's looking right at you and he's present. You can tell he's not talking to himself. He's not looking over your shoulder. And that's so rare nowadays, right, Ben? Like, we're so out multitasking and looking around and just want to meet a lot of people and take a lot of names, whatever. But people really, you know the phrase, right? People don't want your gifts or your presence. They want your presence. And I think his incredible memory comes from being powerfully present. If you take the word, like when we're talking about observation, we're talking the word listen. If you scramble the word letters and listen, it actually spells the word silent. And most people, when they're meeting somebody, they're not... They have this inner voice inside their head, which is also that same voice that keeps them from reading faster, something called subvocalization, meaning we say the words so we can't We can't read any faster than we can talk. But we also sub-vocalization, vocal meaning speech, sub meaning like a submarine under your inner speech, if you will. And so, but the other thing is, like, a lot of times when you're meeting somebody, you're talking to yourself. You're not even thinking about what they're saying. You're thinking about how you're going to respond. And so you're not even present. And so I would say, you know, another tip on remembering names is just observe and be silent. And finally, the last M in mom, Dr. Mom, is the mechanics. And these are the tools, the techniques, the step-by-step strategies on how to remember speech without notes, how I teach actors how to remember, you know, line for word for word scripts, how to learn a foreign language, how to learn, you know, any of these things, numbers that I do on stage. But the mechanics I put last, because if you don't decide and you don't relax, you're not motivated and you don't observe, the mechanics aren't going to support you.
I like it. Dr. Mom, D-R-M-O-M. Cool. I hope you're taking notes if you're listening in. And by the way, I am going to have the show notes for this episode over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/quick. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/K-W-I-K. If you want to go refresh yourself on some of the stuff Jim is talking about. So, Jim, in addition to remembering names better, something that I personally struggle with, I know a lot of other people do too, you've also mentioned about the concept of reading a book a day and mm-hmm. reading faster. Now, when I first had to learn to read more quickly, it was in college when I got handed about 10 books during the first quarter of my learnings at like a liberal arts school. And I was told that the next Monday, which was a week later, I would need to come in having had read each of those books. And the only tip that was given to me was to simply follow along with my index finger as I traced down and through the books, and to just use the finger as a tracer as I went through the book. That didn't seem to work out too well for me. But I'm curious if you have specific speed reading tips that go above and beyond the index finger trick.
I do. And, you know, obviously, I mean, we do a whole like 7-week course on this, but I'll give you some real fast reading hacks, if you will, that people could use. So it's the difference between learning a skill and learning something that could help, you know, improve it a little bit. So I've taken every reading program over the past 23 years that exists. And I could tell you, I'll give you some commonalities of what works and what sometimes doesn't work. So the purpose of reading, right, you want greater speed and velocity, but you also want greater comprehension, right? Because you don't want to have one without the other. There's a Woody Allen quote that said, you know, I took a speed reading course. I read War and Peace. It's about Russia, you know, and that's not the goal. And so traditional speed reading is exactly that. People associate it with skimming or scanning or just skipping a lot of words and getting the gist of what you read. And for me, a lot of my client base for our online programs, they're like doctors. They're like lawyers. They're attorneys, and you don't want your doctor just to get the gist of what they're reading, right? This is kind of important. And so I would say that a few things that you have to overcome, you know, in terms of obstacles to effective reading, and I'll get to the couple hacks on it. Really quickly, what keeps you from reading faster and getting better comprehension? Number one is lack of education, right? We're not born with the ability to read. And so it comes through training. But the last training class you took on reading, probably you were 7 years old. Right, so most people still read like they're 7 years old. And so that's why they're challenged, because the difficulty and the demand has increased so much. But how we learn is still that of like when we're children. The second obstacle is lack of focus. So you have to fix this, right? And so one of the myths or the rumors or the lies that are out there says that if you read faster, you wouldn't understand as much. And I test tens of thousands of people every single year. Right. I mean, our online programs are, and I mentioned, in over 150 countries. So I get a lot of feedback. I find that the faster readers actually have better comprehension because they have better focus. And just to put this to rest, just so you understand, like your brain is like this unbelievable supercomputer. But when we read, we feed the supercomputer one word at a time. I can't even talk that slow because I'm from New York.
Yeah.
Right. But even notice that if this conversation was like that slow, people's minds, what would it naturally do? They would start to daydream. They would start to wander, start to fall asleep. They would start thinking about other things. Isn't that exactly how most people talk about their reading? that when they're reading, that they start to wander, they start to daydream, they start to think about other things, they start to fall asleep. Like, how many people actually use reading as a sedative? You know, like, how many people have a token book by the side of their bed that they've been reading for weeks and weeks and weeks? They use reading. And think about the emotion, boredom tied to that activity. And because for long-term memories, it's just information combined with emotion becomes a long-term memory, right? Information combined with emotion becomes a long-term memory. But if reading is a dull, boring activity for you, that same emotion is going to be linked to that information and you're not going to retain it. And so if you're feeding your brain so slowly, if you don't give your brain the entertainment it needs, it'll seek entertainment elsewhere in the form of distraction. And that's what distraction for a lot of people is they're reading so slow, they're not giving their brain enough stimulus, so it thinks about other stuff. It's similar to like driving. If you're driving like 15, 20 miles an hour, you're not really thinking about the act of driving. You're drinking your coffee, right? You're thinking about the dry cleaning. You're talking to somebody. God forbid you're texting. You're doing five or six different things because you're only going 15 miles an hour. But if you're racing cars going down straightaways at 200 miles an hour, taking these hairpin turns, you're not thinking about anything. You're not trying to text. You're not thinking about the dry cleaning. You're just focused on what's in front of you. That's reading, right? And so second obstacle is focus. And then the third obstacle I'll just give you is the thing I mentioned before, sub-vocalization. How do you get rid of that inner talk? Because have you ever noticed, Ben, like when you're reading something, you hear that voice inside your head reading along with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hopefully it's your own voice. It's not like somebody else's voice. But again, the reason why it's a challenge is that means your reading speed is limited to your talking speed and not your thinking speed. That's why we can listen to podcasts at 1.5 or 2x, because you could think that fast easily. You know, for most people, it's just, you know, but you can't talk that fast.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge. But do you really need to pronounce a word like computer to understand what a computer is? You don't. You know, John F. Kennedy is said to have read 800,000 words a minute, but, you know, he's on record as having, you know, his speech maybe 300 words a minute. There's 700 words a minute he's not pronouncing. So, you know, why do you have to do that? 95% of all the words you read on a regular basis are words. They call sight words. You've seen them 100,000 times. You don't have to pronounce them every time. So those are just some of the obstacles that affect. And so, for example, if you were to hack this, a couple things. Okay, so across the board, a visual pacer has been shown to improve your reading speed because it helps you with your focus. It also helps prevent a fourth obstacle of effective reading, which is regression. Regression is going back and back skipping and rereading lines by accident. They say upwards of 20%, depending on what research you buy into, could be spent just rereading stuff out of bad habits and being unconscious about it. So using your finger. Now, traditional speed reading is what you said. They'll take your finger and go down the page, right? Or they'll make fancy finger motions like an S going down the page or a Z going down the page. The challenge is you're missing big gaps of reading. Right, you're missing big gaps of understanding that's there.
Right.
But they say using a visual pacer, your pen, a highlighter, a mouse on a computer, your finger, as you're underlining the words, don't skip anything, and that number would be 25 to 50%. Now, I don't expect anyone to believe everything I'm saying because ultimately you're the expert. What I would say is it's all theory until you test it. So pick up a book, read for 60 seconds, count the number of lines you just read in 60 seconds, pick up where you left off, read, just underlining lightly with your finger. Don't skip anything. Don't do any fancy finger motions like they teach in other things. Don't skip anything. And just underlining the words with your pen, a highlighter, your finger, that second number after you time it for 60 seconds will be on average 25, 50% gain, which people don't think it's like a lot. A 50% increase in anything is tremendous. Right?
Yeah.
It really adds up. Now, to get better at that, if you want to be even more efficient, what you do is you move in from the margins. So, for example, your eyes, when it's focused, it has something it's called a fixation, right? But you have a little bit of peripheral vision going to your left and to your right. So as you're underlining the words, if you imagine going in from the book an inch from the left and an inch on the right, so your finger doesn't go all the way to the margin, it goes up to about an inch, your peripheral vision will pick up that rest of the word. So you'll be able to pick up another 20% on that alone, at least. Another thing you could experiment with, which I've had really good success with over the past 20 years, and just now science is able to back this up more, is I actually recommend you use a very specific hand while you read. You know, when you're talking about left hand or right hand, because I started seeing anecdotally, I started seeing early on a correlation between the fastest readers. They tend to be musically inclined. They tend to be women, but they also tend to be left-handed. And I would experiment with this, and I'll give you I'll give you a couple of reasons why. But by using your left hand, we know through these cross laterals that, God forbid, you know somebody had head trauma on their left side of their head or the stroke on the left side of their brain. If there's paralysis, it'll manifest on the opposite side, right? Because one half of your brain controls the opposite half of your body and vice versa. And we know that there's a brain-body connection. And what research and studies have shown that there's also a body-brain connection, that using your body in certain ways actually stimulates your brain. And so I say using your left hand, it helps stimulate the right side of your brain. And now this is a gross simplification, but I would hypothesize that, and you could test in your own real results, is that your left brain, they say, and this is, again, simplification, right, in what we have in like 30 seconds. Left side of your brain is logical, right? Language, sounds, linear words. But the right side of your brain, if your left side is logical, your right side is creative, right? It's imagination, it's visualization, you know, it's emotion. And so most people, for reading, it's a left brain process. But right brain is actually where all the meaning is. So you're not just hearing words left brain, you're experiencing them right brain. Like, for instance, I had a student go through our online speed reading course, and I see him on the street, and he's like, Jim, I have a really quick story for you. He's like, I know, you know, I was recently rereading a book that I read during your class, and it was totally different the second time after I graduated your program. I was like, well, tell me about it. What was the book? And he said it was The Old Man and the Sea. I was like, oh, Hemingway. I was like, why was it different the second time? I don't think Hemingway updated the book recently. And he said that when he was in the class, he was practicing with it because I let people choose their own material so it doesn't take time. It actually makes time since they have to do it anyway and work their practice into their training and their real life. But he said the second time I read it after going through the training, he said, I felt like I was in the book. He said, I could smell the ocean. I could hear the ocean waves. I could smell the ocean. He said, I could feel the sand beneath my toes. He said, the one thing I didn't like was the smell of the fish. And it's kind of funny, but that's the rich right brain creativity. You're imagining it, you're in it, you're feeling it. And so by using your left brain, it might help to stimulate the right side of your brain. That helps you comprehend more also. And the other thing I'll just mention is there was this study done by Dr. Lawrence Katz. And he did a study with these seniors, wanted to find out how to keep their brains alive and agile and their memory functional as you grow older, and came up with all these neurobics, like little activities you could do with your body to help stimulate your brain as you grow older. And a lot of it was like using your opposite hand while you eat. You know, that was like brushing your hand with the opposite hand, that kind of thing, because it helps to stimulate your brain to do new activities, just like what you're doing with music, right? Or martial arts. You know, they say like ballroom dancing, very good for your brain. Anything where you have to put your mindfulness into your muscle is going to be good for your brain. Here's a tweetable. As your body moves, your brain grooves. As your body moves, your brain grooves. It actually helps support, enables you to learn, besides all the different chemicals that you're releasing as your body moves also. Because we know that people listen to podcasts on the treadmill or as they're working out are going to learn more like doing that, right? That's just a simple biohack. You know, even there was a study done at Oxford University a couple years ago saying jugglers have bigger brains. That literally by learning the act of juggling actually built more white matter inside of your brain. So, I mean, it's amazing. So that's why I love everything you're doing about keeping people moving, because that's why the brain is there. It's primarily there to just be able to guide your physical movements.
Yeah, you know about the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, right? And how that gets released when you're moving. The interesting thing is it gets released specifically when you're doing chronic repetitive motion, like running or jogging or cycling, because the BDNF somehow gets freed up and the blood flow allows that to basically find its way to your brain, versus when you're, say, lifting weights, it somehow stays on a more muscular level. Mm. And so if you do want to get smarter while you listen to something like the podcast episode you're listening to right now, move with something like running or swimming or cycling even more than like lifting weights, even though you're probably going to get smarter either way if you're listening to this. And by the way, Jim, I want to throw in and get your quick opinion on my tip for speed reading, which is never turn the page backwards. And that helps me with retention too. If I know that that's my last chance to see that page, for some reason I retain it when I follow that rule as I read a book.
I love that. And that's the other thing also, is just having the framework. We're talking about I teach this thing called FAST, and it's a framework, and I love to give it to your people. But one of the tips to be able to learn something faster is just to also to teach it to somebody else. Like, come in with the attitude like you're going to listen to this podcast every single week, and you're going to teach it to somebody else. It has a different level of ownership. And it's make it personal, because information could come inside your mind either through listening to it on an audio like we're having now, or through words, through your eyes. But in order to be able to put it back out, to be able to write about it or to be able to express it verbally, you have to really do something in your brain with it to own that information. And if you went to listen to a podcast but before had the attitude, I'm going to teach whatever I'm going to learn here to a very specific person and think about how you're going to do it, you would take notes differently. You would ask different questions, you know, post different questions. You know, you would organize the information totally differently to be able to express it out. And that's why, you know, as a writer, as you know, by doing it, it makes you such a better expert, because you have to own the material. Even when you write, you listen to something and you teach it to someone else, you're not using their exact words, you're using your own words for it.
Yeah.
Right? And so you have to use so much more of your nervous system. But that's, you know, this feedback loop is so important.
It's true. A lot of people ask me how I know a lot about fitness and nutrition, and a big part of it is I have a weekly Q&A podcast that I've done for 8 years.
Wow.
So for 8 years, every single week, and I've missed maybe 2 weeks out of those 8 years, I've had to answer people's questions about fitness and nutrition. And by teaching people over the airwaves about their bodies and fitness and nutrition, it's helped me to retain that so much more clearly. So yeah, it really is true that when you teach it, you got to learn it well. Yeah.
And when you teach it, you get to learn it twice.
Yeah, that's part of it too. Yeah, you have to learn it, and then you got to spit it back out. So I have one other question for you, because we do have a lot of listeners who are into their bodies and into physical function and into things like nutrition and diet. And there's a lot of stuff floating around out there about, you know, nutrition for optimal brain function and diet for optimal brain function. So do you follow a specific diet? Is there a Gym Quick diet?
I want to be very responsible for. And so like it's hard because I have something that works for me. I don't know if people are bio individual, but this is not my area of expertise. So you'd be in a much better position to be able to talk about this, but I could share my personal lifestyle a little bit of what I do each day to kind of have optimal brain performance and focus and to be a better learner, because I think the vessel is really important for it. That being said, I'm not a nutritionist or a psychologist or anything that ends in an ist. So I just want to be very, like, not being careful not to diagnose or to treat anything. So for me, yes, I think good diet is number one, because I think, you know, you are what you eat. And so foods, and, you know, I do indulge in, you know, what they say is just brain healthy foods, like certain nuts, like walnuts and avocado. And I eat, you know, my fresh wild salmon and such like that. Even before food, I really make sure I get oxygen in my body. I mean, I'm not just saying about going into a chamber, which I do also do that. And I have certain breathing patterns and routines I do when I wake up first thing in the morning, when I go to bed at night. But on top of just the foods I eat, I'm maybe more conscious about making sure I'm hydrated, I'm getting enough clean air, because I feel like those two are more important for me personally. And I know, like, if I ever get tired, I always go to just staying hydrated and make sure I'm breathing, because your brain is 20% of your body weight probably, but it uses 20% of the nutrients, you know, as you know. But a lot of people's posture is so bad and they're slumped over and they collapse their diaphragm and their lungs, and the lower one third of your lungs really absorbs the majority of a lot of the oxygen to your bloodstream and stuff. I eat everything organic and local, and I juice every single day. You know, on top of that, you know, I'm really big on greens, and they work for me. But again, I stay away from gluten. But for me, I'm bio individual. I just had, you know, full spectrum hormonal food sensitivity, and so I just, from that kind of, you know, quantified self kind of place, I just kind of see what's in my green zone, my yellow zone, and my red zone, what I should absolutely stay away from. And I do that. I do intermittent fast in the morning. I don't usually have a whole meal until midnight personally. I don't really talk about stuff, but my 10 keys. So 1/3 of your memory, for example, is predetermined by genetics and biology. And that's about the number that researchers have agreed on, about 1/3 of it. But that means 2/3 completely in your control. So the 2/3 for me that I focus on in terms of lifestyle encompasses 10 things. Number one is a good diet, right? Number two is killing ants. And ants, I got from Dr. Daniel Amen, automatic negative thoughts, because your thoughts are things. And here's the thing, when you say you have a horrible memory or you're not smart enough or you can't learn this or it's difficult, your mind, I remember, you know, like preparing for a marathon, and it said this verbatim because, you know, I'm a memory expert, but it's just one chapter was on the psychology of it, said, your brain is like a supercomputer and your self-talk is a program that will run. So if you tell yourself you're not good at names, you will not remember the name of the next person you meet because you program your supercomputer not to. And so you always have to be careful of your automatic negative thoughts, because thoughts are things, right? And here's the tweetable. Your mind is always eavesdropping on your self-talk, right? So I'm going to go, is it okay, Ben? I'll go through these 10 quick things for my lifestyle.
Yeah, let's hear them.
And the thing is not one of these things would people debate. Right. And so, but again, a coach is not someone who says something brand new. It just reminds you of, like, out of these 10s, which of these 10 things are you not optimizing or are you neglecting? So number one, a good diet. Number two, killing your negative thoughts, ants. Number three is exercise, right? Because we know that movement, exercise is just good for your brain, period. Anything that's good for your heart, it's good for your head. And they always do these tests, you know, with people who are more physically active, they'll do better on mental acuity, memory. It's across the board. Number four, brain nutrients. Which I know you know a lot about, but if you're not getting the nutrients, the protective elements, the nootropics, whatever, in your diet, maybe you want to supplement them. Number four is brain nutrients. Number five, positive peer group. And that's big, because a lot of people, you know, yes, you are what you eat, and yes, you are your thoughts, but you are also the average of the people you spend the most time with. And positive peer group is this, you know, they talk about eagles spending time, you know, like being an eagle or being a duck or what have you. But I'm just saying, are the people you spend time with, are they encouraging you? Are they teaching you? Are they challenging you? Are they kind? Are they supporting your better brain, right? And that's number five. Number six, clean environment. They say that your external world is a reflection of your internal world. You know this, if you clean your room or you clean your desk, you start getting, or you clean your notes, like just with Evernote or something like that, you have a clearer brain. I would say number seven is sleep, because we have an epidemic of sleeplessness. I don't know how people are getting away with as little sleep as people are getting, but we know sleep is critical for the brain. It's critical for good decision-making. It's critical for creativity. It's critical also for long-term memory, because that's where you're consolidating. And, you know, they say, when you build a muscle, you know, people say it's at the gym, but you build it when you sleep, right? When you restore, when you rest, same thing with your brain. You make all these connections, but when you're dreaming and when you're converting everything short-term to long-term, very critical. We do this whole thing on how to remember your dreams, which I think is important also. That's number seven. Number eight for your lifestyle is brain protection. I would just say somebody who has had a number of concussions and you know, head traumas, you know, make sure you protect your brain. Be there and be active. But, you know, wear your helmet and use, you know, use common sense. That's number eight. Number nine is new learnings. So important, right? And I don't have to say that to you, anyone listening, because you're listening to this, you're a lifelong learner, right? Make those new connections, because that's how you make neuroplasticity, is either new thoughts or new behaviors create neuroplasticity. And finally, number 10, stress management. Again, we talked about cortisol, adrenaline, and everything that goes on in your body when you're stressed, but make sure you have protocol in your body to be able to rest. And, you know, I have a flow tank that I go into, you know, every single morning, and I have my meditation. I use these different brain apps, you know, Headspace, whatever you name it, you know, Muse and things that I like to support using technology to be able to do that. But make sure you have some quiet time. You get rid of that stress for whatever activity helps you to do that. And I just say these 10 things because maybe hearing them, because I don't think anyone would debate any of them, but just like, yeah, I'm not really getting enough sleep, or really I'm not, this one person in my life is really negative and it's really, you know, hurting my mind, or really I'm not really managing my stress very, very, very much, or am I really committed to new learnings? Am I listening to a podcast a day or reading something every single day, or, you know, something like that? Or maybe I need to supplement with some kind of brain nutrients or vitamin Bs or my omegas or whatever.
Those 10 things are things that we could probably do entire podcasts on for each one of them. Those are really cool, though. I mean, everything you've got here in terms of your system, your methods for reading faster, your methods for memorizing names, the 10 tips that you just went over. I know you've systematized a lot of this stuff. I know you have some of it available on your website, but as we're running up against time, I'm curious, how can people go and learn more, or even, you know, I think you have courses and things like that online. What's the best next step for people if they decide that they want to just take this to the next level?
Well, thank you. And then, and I have a gift for everybody that you and I talked about. I made a series of 4 videos, and it's me on camera teaching you how I would learn any subject or skill faster. And so one of the videos is dedicated to that. There's another video on how to memorize these 10 things forwards and backwards and give a speech, for example, you know, talking points without notes. And there's another video specifically, we talk about Dr. Mom, and that final M was mechanics, which is the strategies on how to remember names. So I did another video for you on how to remember names. And special for your audience, just as a thank you, Ben, because I really appreciate everything you're doing, because being a conduit for this, all this information for people and getting it out to people in very usable ways, in ways that's also entertaining and engaging. So people who could get these 4 videos, they could just go to jimquick.com/Ben. And the only thing with my last name is Jim Quick. It's K-W-I-K, K-W-I-K. And that really is my last name, jimquick.com/Ben. And there you could have instant access to those 4 videos. And I hope you enjoy. And if anything, you know, our programs are all on quicklearning.com, kwiklearning.com. You can see our speed reading course, our memory course, our thinking program. And we have this program specially designed for students and study skills. And then the last thing I would say, I would love to connect with all each of you is, you know, on social media, on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. It's all at Jim Quick, K-W-I-K. And you mentioned that thing with the X-Men, and that's my cover. That's my cover photo for my Facebook page and my Twitter. It's me and the entire cast of X-Men. It's something that there's this whole backstory about it that I think people would get some interesting insight on how to reach, not only set goals, but also get their goals. And there's a link, you know, on my cover photo for that also at Jim Quick.
Nice. Nice. And folks, if you're listening in, Jim is the real deal. I've had a chance to hang out with him, and he really is an intelligent, real person who loves to teach people how to learn stuff faster and how to do a lot of the things that we just talked about today. So I'd highly recommend that you check out his videos. So those are at jimquick.com/Ben. If you want the show notes from today's episode, they're at bengreenfieldfitness.com/quick. And Jim, thanks so much for coming on the show today and sharing this stuff with us.
Ben, thank you so much for having me. And everyone, thank you so much for listening.
Cool. Well, folks, this is Ben Greenfield and Jim Quick signing out from bengreenfieldfitness.com. Have a healthy week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.